I forgot how to say my own name. I really did.
Welcome to another episode of Comedy Wham Presents with me, your host Valerie, coming to you from 2024 Moon Tower Comedy Festival at the Driscoll Hotel, the lounge, people. My sometime co-hosts, Miss Pernton and Mookie, are resting at home. ComedyWham.com is your place to go for features about all Austin comedy. In addition to podcasts, we bring you articles, album reviews, our advice column, all of my Austin Chronicle articles, a festivals page, an FPIA page, which is a super local reference, and you can see the history of that contest, and I'm just digging into the super local reference here. You will find all of the best comedy shows on our events pages for Austin, Houston, and DFW. If you're a comic in those cities and want your show featured on the calendar, click Submit a Show at the top of our homepage to complete the short survey. Tag us on your Instagram stories, and we'll share your show promo. And we're also offering promo boosts if you're interested. Follow us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Comedy Wham. Looking for ways to support all these resources we provide? You can donate to Comedy Wham on PayPal, Venmo, or even Patreon. Search for Comedy Wham and check out our subscriber perks. Now let's get back to our podcast. Launched in 2016, the podcast project brings you funny people and their stories. As a fan, I like to delve into a comic's background and motivations and will usually take a detour along the way. Consider the interview a way for you to get to know the folks that make the comedy scene as fascinating offstage as it is on stage. And if you like this podcast, please rate and review us. Today, as I mentioned, we are recording live on location at the Driscoll Hotel Lounge. We are awaiting our truffle popcorn, so there might be some ASMR happening. Our guest taught at Boom Chicago in Amsterdam. She was a founding member of Grover, which was the first Herald improv troupe at Boom Chicago. She's part of the sketch comedy troupe That's Hollywood, Baby. And she's got two specials out, her debut special, Slowpoke, and her follow-up, Half and Half. And now Comedy Wham presents our guest, Olivia Flood Wiley.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
I told you it was long.
Very
happy. Right?
Yeah, it was very impressive listening to the whole thing. Yeah.
Welcome to Moon Tower. This is
Thank you.
Your first?
It's my first.
How
yes.
exciting.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, yeah. I bet. And you, if memory serves, you had your Cap City show last night.
Or I did.
The night before? Okay,
yeah, last night, yeah.
Have you been to Austin before?
Yeah, so I headlined the Red Room at Cap City in November.
Okay.
And had, like, the time of my life.
Yeah. I love that room.
Yeah, it's a great room. My mom came with me.
Oh,
yeah, because it was my first road gig. And she was like, I can't miss it. I have to be there.
Hey, Mom.
Yeah, Peggy. Shout out to Peggy. She's the best. So, yeah, I had been in that room before. It was really fun to be back, yeah.
Were and you then in the Red Room
in
again?
In the Red Room okay. again, yeah. And I felt very Hollywood, because I got to, like, run out of the theater and hop into the car to go to my second show.
Fancy.
And I was
yeah.
like, I think this is the moment where I feel like I've made it.
Yeah.
It's just the car
just
between two
moment.
Shows, yeah, to go do my seven-minute set somewhere else. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, we've got coffee delivered.
Yes.
Ready? Okay, so pop quiz here.
Okay.
So I always have this icebreaker question, Olivia, and it is one word to describe your past. I wish I could have captured the facial expression just now. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, watching my own stand-up has made me realize I get very bug-eyed. Like, I had never realized that before, and I was like, I've been doing that my whole life.
Yeah.
And not clocking that I've just been frogging people when I have a strong reaction. Let me think, one word. Well, my first thought is rocky.
Mm.
But that feels too dramatic for how privileged I've been.
Oh.
If it's hyphenated, does that count?
It's fun. I've had oof. Somebody has said oof.
Okay.
Before so.
Double-edged.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to go for.
Okay.
Yeah, as with a hyphenated last name, I feel like I get to argue for that.
Yes.
A double-barreled single word.
Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Los Angeles.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, which I can't recommend at all. I did not enjoy it. Yeah, and it was sort of a running joke in my family that I was always like, I'm going to leave immediately, yeah, and I'm not living here again.
Your bio very prominently says you couldn't wait to leave.
Yeah, LA.
You couldn't wait to go to Amsterdam just to be away from LA.
Yes, exactly. But I've been very strong in my anti-LA, yeah, stance. Except for, I grew up in the Valley,
okay,
in North Hollywood, which is a part of LA that gets, like, really dunked on all the time.
Yeah.
And that's the one part of LA I'll defend. Like, the part everyone else is like, we agree this is trash. I'm like, yeah, I hate LA, but how dare you? This is important to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Corn delivery.
Amazing.
Arrived.
Yeah.
Of course, now the irony is that I'm asking you to talk about yourself, and you know, I want you to enjoy this popcorn, especially right when it's okay.
When it's hot.
Just, yeah, we're gonna.
Should we just take a one kernel?
Yeah.
Break. Oh, that's so good.
Highly addictive.
I'm pretty sad I have to answer questions now.
We could just take a little pause break and just chow down.
No, I need self-control.
You know what? You just inspired me to have this idea. So, are you familiar with the hot ones?
Yeah.
Maybe I need to do, you know, how quietly can you eat popcorn on mic? And that's the challenge.
I do like very much breaking food into its smallest segments.
Yeah.
Like, I'll eat a blackberry segment by segment.
No way.
So I do feel in some ways I was born for this.
Oh, well, you know.
Very concerned.
Okay. Well, we're just gonna.
I did it already.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I've never seen that.
It's loud.
I'm just like, how many kernels can I throw in my mouth?
I always feel like when I'm eating popcorn, it'll start with like one piece,
mm-hmm,
and then it'll go into two, and then it's just fistfuls by the end, just like raining down into my face.
And are you an unpopped kernel person?
No.
No.
I would say. Are you?
No. Okay. Yeah.
Like last, like when they're left in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Knock on wood. No teeth damage so far, but you know, that's the threat that there's,
mm-hmm,
teeth are gonna fall out.
I do like a lightly popped kernel.
Mm.
Like when there's just like a little fluff coming out of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm a big fan of that. Yeah. But I think I'm a little bit weak for completely unpopped kernel. Yeah.
Okay. All right, okay. Well, that was our little popcorn
break.
Feel free to, mm-hmm, have some while we're talking. All right, so the Valley.
Yes.
North Hollywood area, mm-hmm, which my boyfriend is in L.A., so I know kind of the overall landscape.
Mm-hmm.
That part of, obviously, is a very nice part of, well, I guess some parts of Hollywood are a little shady, sketchy,
mm-hmm,
and other parts, but that's any big city.
Yeah.
What was it for you growing up that you trash on LA so much?
Yeah, I don't like being in cars particularly.
Oh,
so that's a pretty big barrier.
That's a big part of LA living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hate driving. So, mm, well, you know, I was driving like 13 miles to high school. So that's a lot of time.
That's like 2 hours.
Exactly. LA, sometimes it would be an hour and a half home if it was in rush hour. But I also just sort of felt like, I guess in like the scenes as a child, you know, the groups I ran, the crowd
the
I ran
crowd,
with.
But.
Yeah. I just felt like you could really feel the effects of the industry as a whole permeating things.
Oh.
And it just felt like there was very much a focus on like image and shallowness and connections that when I talked to my friends who grew up in other places, they were like, yeah, I did not have that experience. So that bummed me out. I didn't love that. And to be honest, I think some of it is like, how much can you run away from who you were when you were 15?
Mm.
I think that really tainted my experience, which was pretty difficult when I moved back because I was in Amsterdam for almost 4 years. And then I moved back into my childhood bedroom and it felt like none of it had happened.
Oh, wow.
Like I kept waking up and thinking I was going to have to go to soccer practice and I just hallucinated. I was like, I lived in a foreign country with my boyfriend. Now it's like nothing happened.
Oh my God.
Just another Monday in the Valley.
Wow. Yeah. Were you a performer when you were growing up?
Sort of on and off. Like, I said I wanted to be an actor. My mom's an actress, and she was like, you can do whatever you want when you're 18. Nothing until then.
Oh, wow.
Although when my dad lost his job when I was 6, I did offer to go into child acting to help pay the bills. My mom was like, that's very sweet. No, but...
That really is like an L.A. thing, though.
Yes, right?
Because the reason I asked if you'd performed, whether or not you did, I just wanted to get like a baseline of how pervasive is it. So if you didn't perform, I'm like, holy shit, and you still felt that way.
Yeah, I guess like my house was very... like, my mom isn't famous, but she's a professional actor.
Yeah.
Like, she was the primary breadwinner. Like, that was what she did.
Wow.
So I sort of saw, like, I guess more of a, it's like a non-glamorous grind of being in the industry.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, closer than I think it would be for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's sort of, you know, like going to high school, like, with a child star, it's a weird experience that I think doesn't happen that many other places.
Yeah. Do you want to name names?
Well, it's just Victoria Justice went to my high school.
Okay, well,
but
I guess the effect is lost on me.
Which is the best thing you could have said to me.
Oh.
Yeah.
I gotta give props to your mom for like insulating you and saying, wait till you're 18. If you're gonna do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait.
Yes. And she was like, she knew firsthand how horrible the industry is, of course. So she was like, I'm not going to expose you to that until you've absolutely decided you must be a part of it. And then once I decided it, they were incredibly supportive, both my parents. I think my mom was a little bit like, oh, I know what you're in for, but I understand you have to do it.
So what did you dabble in, both before you were 18 as far as performance, and then after that, and you got permission, if you will? Because now, today, you're a stand-up, you're a sketch performer, you're an improv performer, you teach improv. I don't know if you teach other things, but like you're the whole
I weirdly went all in.
You went all in, yeah.
I decided no hobbies for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have one thing be my identity.
Yeah.
So I did, in seventh grade, and this is a potentially cancelable fact for me on a few fronts.
Okay.
I did a monologue contest, and I did a Bill Cosby routine, which is like, there's four different things there where you're like, that's not acceptable.
Well, it depends on if it was before.
It was pre.
Okay.
I'll say that. I wasn't like, separate the art from the artist at 12. so I did that and I won. So that was, I won an iPod Touch.
Ooh.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
They've discontinued it for a reason. but then I didn't really do anything again through all of high school. I wanted to go into biopsychology.
Ooh.
Yeah. I saw Blackfish and was the documentary about the orcas, Tilikum, the whale that killed like three people.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll study whale brains. It was a very specific desire. And then I got to college and got just wildly depressed.
Mm.
And I left school for a year and a half. And before I left, I went to an advisor, like first semester of my sophomore year, and I was like, I sort of don't know what I want to do, but I'm thinking about double majoring in like bio and psych. And she was like, well, it's too late for that, so you're going to need to figure something else out.
Wow.
Which is a classic.
Very supportive.
UC Berkeley administration approach, where they're just like, you'll figure it out on your own. And so, yeah, I dropped out the next semester. I left for a year and a half. And lived in Yosemite. I lived in a tent in the woods with a roommate. That's always an extra bonus that I love telling people. It's like they think the tent is bad enough, and I'm like, oh, I shared it with someone. But I worked at a general store there, and that's employee housing, it's the tents. then when I got back, I was still sort of deciding what I wanted to do, and I had joined a comedy group on campus my freshman year.
Okay.
And they did like one act student written plays.
Okay.
And so I joined that, and then my sophomore year I wrote one and I directed it, and that was super fun. And when I was home, my dad was like, "Do you think it's relevant that the only thing that's brought you joy through all of college is this comedy thing?" And I was like, maybe that's something that I should think about. Yeah, and I think I was just terrified to even think about jumping in. You know, I'm such a perfectionist, and I have such intense anxiety that it really was like, what if I'm a nightmare at it? It's humiliating. And then once I, like, got back, and I had this whole series of, like, once my depression got better, I started having panic attacks, and I was just really, like, going through it. And I sort of broke through on the other side and was like, well, if nothing matters, I might as well take advantage of the fact that nothing matters. And also, like, if I'm anxious going to the grocery store, like, I have to do things while being scared anyway.
Yeah.
So I might as well do the things I really want to do.
So I am still shocked, surprised that you had not done anything performance-wise since seventh grade. You join a club, and I don't know, you know, what kind of background and training, you know, education you get from that, but your first foray is to direct and write. I mean, yeah, you said you did do some performance.
I did two semesters with them first, and then...
But then your, like, sophomore year, you jump in and you write and direct something, and it brought you joy.
Yes.
With no real previous practice or experience. Like, you didn't associate assistant direct. You just directed.
Yeah, well,
roads.
To be fair, I think I haven't made it clear enough what the quality of the productions were. Like, I wasn't doing Death of a Salesman, you know. It was, they were 10-minute one-acts that were just so chaotic.
Yeah.
And
did you get it recorded?
No.
Oh, is this pre?
Oh,
like,
how I wish. Yeah. Or maybe I don't wish. Maybe it's better that it exists in my memory and not anywhere else. So I just sort of, once I had written that was like a very eye-opening moment, like writing that and directing, and it just felt like easy and comfortable and like I was in the right spot, which I have sort of spent my whole life feeling like I'm just in the wrong spot. And then when I got back from the year off after my dad had been like, go get him, Tiger, that's when I went pretty all out and I auditioned for an improv group, which I had been avoiding because I was too scared to do it freshman year. And then by the time I was a little bit less scared, all my best friends were already on the team I wanted to join. And I was like, I'm going to have to audition in front of all of my best friends with no experience. And if I'm bad, it's going to be so, so embarrassing.
Yeah.
But then I had the, like, breakthrough of, oh, well, nothing matters. So I auditioned and I made the team.
Nice.
And that was really fun. And then I joined a sketch team as well and was doing, like, a filmed sketch.
Uh-huh.
Some of those still exist.
Okay.
And I am proud of those.
Okay.
Yeah. I still like them. I actually reshot with That's Hollywood Baby, my current sketch, one of the ones that I did
back
in college.
Cool.
And that was really fun to get to do it with, like, money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
an actual budget.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, it was a pretty quick turnaround, I would say.
So, I think I got myself confused on the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
You were in college.
Yeah.
You took a break. You came back to college.
Yes.
And that's when you started doing the sketch and improv activity?
So, yeah, I guess I've confused myself. We've talked about this. When I sat down... You pointed out, like, two different times in the past where I had done something that made no sense, and I was like, I don't know why I did it, but there's proof that I did, but... You were not attacking me, you were just like, I have questions.
Yeah.
But yes, okay, so freshman year I joined the theater group. Sophomore year I started writing. And then it's a little confusing, so I dropped out my second semester of my sophomore year, but I stayed in Berkeley for the first semester of my junior year, and I was just working at a hotel there, which is definitely haunted, but that's a completely separate story. And then, I auditioned for the improv team that semester, and then I was gone for, like, fully gone in Yosemite for, like, 9 months. It's a very confusing timeline, and I'll warn you going forward, it's not going to get clearer.
Okay, all right. To let go of my analytical brain. I told you, I'm a mathematician. Everything has to make sense and be, you know.
Yeah, I should have just made a timeline and brought it for you. That would have been easier.
I'll have to tell Bruce next time.
Yeah. Sure. Could you please have your clients make sense? So the
question that I want to ask you is, after you started doing the performance stuff, did you get them to let you switch your majors, or did you stick with the brain?
So I dropped the idea of bio and I did psych on its own. And that was sort of my concession with myself. I was like, I'm going to try to do comedy full out, but I am still going to get a degree that I could do something with later on.
Yeah.
Of course, I picked psych, which is like, I think, one of the least hireable degrees. It's not like I went with accounting. But yeah, so I did psych, and I...
But you know what? It has to... I mean, this is my opinion, but psych has to be really good for you when you're working with other people. Sketches, improv, even stand-up, trying to get, you know, understand what people's responses to things. I would think it would actually be good for you, as you know, just the person that processes.
My focus was in developmental psychology, so I was like researching kids, which is super helpful for comedians, in terms of being on the same level of maturity and emotional strength.
That makes perfect sense.
I'm like, you remind me so much of Elisa, that 3-year-old that I had to take notes on, which was a weird thing I had to do. I had to go into preschools and be like, so tell me about yourself, Thomas. What's your day-to-day life like? It was my favorite part of school, really.
Okay, so anything else notable before you graduate?
Yeah, so I had... the last thing that I hadn't done was stand-up, basically. And I had a friend, Elliot Mack, who's actually a stand-up in LA, who I do shows with all the time now. But we were on the same improv team, and I mentioned that I had been writing material for 4 years. And he was like, this is nonsense. Why are you not doing stand-up? And he was basically just like, give me your laptop right now. I'm going to look at it. And then he read through everything, and he was like, oh, thank God it's good, because this would have been so uncomfortable if I had to be like, give up on your dream right now. And so he basically, like, put me on stage for the first time. And I did 2 shows in college, and that was it. In, like, January of my last year. And then I didn't do it for, like, a year and a half after that. And that was after I graduated and was living in Amsterdam. And that's when I really count as my start date for stand-up, is once I was in Amsterdam.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you get wind of Boom Chicago? Because that's like a big thing. There's a handful of people that are in Austin that have done it. Mm-hmm. And it's just always a remarkable thing for me.
Yeah, it's sort of like grad school for comedians. Mm-hmm. Like, people will go and do 2 years and then come back a lot more developed. But so I studied abroad in the Netherlands for my last semester of college.
Oh,
so I was in Maastricht. And it was because my timeline was all messed up through college. So all my friends had graduated like a year and a half before. And I was like, if I spend one more semester here, I'm going to lose my mind. I studied abroad in the fall, my last semester. And my sister... called me, and she was like, I was listening to a podcast and Seth Meyers talked about this place, Boom Chicago, and she was like, why don't you just take a class once you graduate, and then you can come home and figure out what you want to do. So I signed up for like 101, and I was like, okay, I'll be here for 8 weeks and then I'll go home. And I just ended up like falling in love with the city, and I have an Irish passport, so I could work there. So I signed a year lease after like a month, and was like, okay, I'll do a year, and we'll see.
Yeah.
So I was just taking classes there. And so then that a guy from my intro class was like, you're really funny. Do you do stand-up? And he was like, I run a show. And I completely bluffed. I was like, oh, yeah, big time. Me stand-up? Way back. So I did, like, my first 5 minutes at a show there, and then got booked on another show, and then another show from that. And then a guy asked me to help him set up a show, and then sort of sprang it on me that I was going to be headlining. And he was like, so you can do, like, 15, right? And it was my fifth show.
Oh my gosh.
And I again bluffed. I was like, oh yeah, no problem. And I did that. And then, yeah, after like 2 years, ended up like being brought on to Comedy Embassy, which is like a professional comedians group.
Wow.
And so then I was able to perform at like the comedy clubs regularly and actually make money from stand-up. And then I ended up being on the house team of Boom Chicago. And then I was on their short form team later, and then I taught improv classes towards the end. So yeah, it all just ended up becoming my whole life.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to at all.
It was just one class.
Yeah.
8 weeks is all it was supposed to be.
4 years later.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. So I watched parts of, I think, I can't remember if I only watched parts of Slowpoke or Half and Half. I think it was probably Slowpoke. Your comedy is like, it's palatable to all people. I don't know how else to, that sounds like a really bad way to describe your comedy.
No, thank you.
But the point that I want to get to is one of the things that somebody that I interviewed that went to Boom Chicago, is the most valuable lesson that they learned is, and it's interesting for you because you didn't really jump in full force into stand-up until there,
mm-hmm.
is, you okay?
Oh yeah, well, thank you.
Is having to change their comedy.
To appeal to everybody.
Yeah.
It was invaluable. Like, I really think that it, it's amazing because the English scene there was only about 5 years old when I started, and has exploded since then. Amsterdam's a really international city, and so English is a common language, but you're performing to a lot of people where it's their second or third language. And so not only do you need to make jokes that are clear, like, across cultures, you also have to make them really clear to people speaking in a second language. And so, and not only did I have to learn, which I think was really amazing to have to learn from scratch, like right from the beginning, to make it, you know, that clear to everyone. And also, like, I got notes from people who had been there for a long time being like, you needed to change that word or this word because there are things that people are going to think about differently. Yeah.
So, do you think that when you were there, that you had a clear favorite as far as the three forms of performance?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think stand-up is my real one true love. It's the thing that that sort of keeps me going the most. Improv feels more for me. Like, improv is so joyful. And like, all my best friends were from the theater, and I just got to, like, mess around.
Yeah.
And I love teaching improv. So they feel very different. Like, I honestly don't know how good I am at improv. I just like it.
Yeah.
Whereas stand-up is much more for me about, like, honing your craft and getting in on it. Yeah.
But the sketch is there too when you're in a sketch.
Yeah, that's always sort of an afterthought to me. I don't know why.
Wow, okay.
Like, I do really like sketch, but I sort of am only, like, I don't sit down to write sketch. I really only write when I have a super clear idea of a sketch I'd like to do. Whereas with stand-up, I'm always really working on, like, okay, I need new material all of the time, and I'm always thinking that way. But I guess sketch sort of comes after I have a really, really strong idea that I want made specifically.
Yeah. Was it a difficult decision for you to leave Amsterdam?
It was. It was, I mean, I was emotionally, it was devastating, and I loved my life there. But I, the same things that meant that I could be a professional comedian quickly. Are we okay on sound? Okay.
I
am soft spoken.
You're doing great, actually.
Oh, thank you.
I should probably be checking, but.
Levels. I've heard that.
Levels, yeah. Yes. Should be checking levels. Also, this we need to take Barbary. So let's see, look. Guys, if you the three people listening, if you've not had the Driscoll's truffle popcorn, you're truly missing out on life.
Next level.
Yeah. Okay. Now that we've chomped our popcorn a little bit.
I'm glad you reminded me.
Yeah.
Leaving
what
Amsterdam.
Was I saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the same thing that meant that I could be a professional stand-up relatively shortly also meant that I hit a ceiling pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all I wanted was to be a part of this, like, professional group of comedians. And then I made it, and after, like, 3 months, I was like, I hate this.
Oh, no.
I don't want to do the same 20-minute set, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for, you know, the same crowds. And I went to London for my friend Simon Lucas's show, and I opened for Dara O'Brien. He has two I's in his name.
Oh.
It's I-A-I. So I always mess it up.
Okay.
And I just was watching him, and he was amazing. And I realized, like, oh, I haven't felt inspired in a long time. And I just really wanted to be in a place where I wasn't amongst the funniest people in the room.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bad place to be.
Yeah.
You want to be around people where you're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I could never do that. So, yeah. And also, this is so awful. My family, who I love, are in LA. And I was like, well, as much as I dislike LA, if my career and to like 90% of the people I love most are in one place, maybe I should give it a shot. Mm. Just do like 2 years, Olivia. Yeah. Just try it. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Amsterdam, I visited ages ago, hustling, bustling little city. I was thinking, okay, she hates LA. Maybe the next step is New York. But the family pull.
The family pull and...
cheap rent, I'm guessing.
There's that, yeah. Because I live with my parents, which, I mean, you pay in other ways for that.
Look,
but
full disclosure, I live with my mom. Mm-hmm. We went into a house together, and I get it.
Yes, fully understand. Yeah. To be clear, if my mom is listening, it's not emotionally. It's not about you, Mom. It's that I'm paying, you know, my own assessment of where I should be at in my life right now. I've thought about New York, but my mom is from Queens, and when we grew up, she would teach an acting program on the East Coast, and we would go and, like, stay with my grandma during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I got, like, a real up-close look of what it's actually like to live in New York, like, in terms of, like, you know, taking the subway to the grocery store and then carrying your bags up five flights of stairs and doing all of that in winter and in summer. And I think maybe if I had like this shiny, faraway idea of what New York was, I would be like, let's do it. And I just know I'm just so soft. You know, I just,
my life is... I think I have the title for this.
So, yeah, I just don't know that I I think I know too much.
Yeah.
I'm sure once I was there, it would be fine.
I mean, we have to adapt or else, you know, you end up like a sewer rat. I don't know. It was a terrible one.
It was not the word I thought you were going to say, but I was very happy when it came out.
Okay, so you get to L.A., and now you're actually back in L.A. with a really different perspective of who you are and the things that you like.
Yeah.
So how did it feel like coming home? You possess like this knowledge about yourself and these things that you want to create and be a part of, versus the before where you're like, industry, it's all weighing down on me.
Yeah, I think when I first got back, and I talk about this in my most recent hour, but I sort of slid back home just ready to have a mental breakdown. Like, it was, it felt like a, like in college when I would come home, I would instantly get sick. Like, it was like my body had been, like, holding out at school, and then I would get sick the first few days. And it did feel sort of like I had been holding out for, like, 4 years, and my whole body was like, all right, we got to do a hard reset here. Like, to the point where, like, my parents went out of town for 2 weeks, and I had to be, like, sent to my aunt's house to make sure I was fine. You know, like a Victorian girl being sent to the seaside for her constitution. Okay. Yeah. I was like, I'm 28. How's everyone doing? I used to live in a foreign country, and they're like, sure you did, Olivia. Pat on the back. But, yeah, so I was... It was sort of hard for me to even think about comedy for the first few months that I was back.
Yeah.
And then my therapist and I had a deal. I had to do one thing each week to pursue my dreams.
Oh,
and I found this all-women's mic that was like a godsend. It was called Witty Titties.
And what is it called?
Witty Titties.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it.
They're, all women's shows always have such intense names. There's like, there's ones I've done are Witty Titties, Time of the Month, The Cunnilingus Comedy Show. I did No Man's Land, which is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I got lost in the bowl of popcorn and I completely lost my train of thought. I started going to Witty Titties and that sort of got my momentum back up.
Yeah.
And that was like a super supportive crowd where you could actually work on jokes, because I was so overwhelmed at the open mic scene. And like in Amsterdam,
because you hadn't done open mics
not
in
at,
LA
all.
At all.
Mm-mm. Yeah. I'd never performed in LA before I moved back. And in Amsterdam, we were very spoiled. Like, Dutch people will pay to go to an open mic.
Wow.
You would go to an open mic where they packed the theater out, or, like, the bar out. There'd be, like, 70 people there. And the hosts would still be like, yeah, do whatever you want. Try new material. It's fine. And so, you know, I came back, and I was, like, paying $5 to perform in a basement for three people who weren't paying attention. And I was like, I could practice at home and have the same experience. And then I realized, like, I was never going to get anything done if I didn't have something I needed to work on. Like, I would have just sort of rotted at home. And so I booked a venue to do my own hour, to do half and half. And the idea was I would take some things over from Slowpoke, and I'd add in anything new I had. That's why it was called Half and Half. In like October, I booked that for February, so that I had an end goal of like when it would be.
Okay.
Up.
Wait, Olivia. Wait. So you're having like this, not meltdown, but you're like having this really difficult time. You've come back home. You're talking to your therapist. You set this, I think, a very ambitious goal of, you know, once a week, do something that pursues your dream. And then all of a sudden, in October, you're booking something to force yourself to do a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What's that math? Four months later?
Yeah. Yeah, in hindsight, maybe it wasn't a great plan. Like, it could have gone really bad. But I just knew, and I'm such a procrastinator. Mm. Like, I really hoped that would change once my full-time job was, like, what I loved. Uh-huh. And it turns out, no, I procrastinate just as much on stand-up as I did on essays. And I knew if it was too far away, I would forget about it. And then, like, a month before, I would be like, oh, God, I have to go to an open mic every night to try to generate material. Or I would just end up doing Slowpoke again, which defeated the purpose. So, yeah, 4 months felt like a sweet spot of, like, enough time to work on things, but it would still stay present in my brain. But it could have been real bad.
Kudos to you for, like, recognizing how hard you could have pushed yourself and, you know, getting it done. And also, all right, I got to dissect more. So then there's the whole marketing and promoting. How do you do that when you're just back in? Because, you know, the whole LA thing seems to me like you got to know all the right people, even just, you know, in that culture of the open mics and the showcases, not even talking about the big venues. How do you do that when you've just come back home?
So, to be fair, there were no strangers at my show. Like, it was all... there was nobody who didn't intimately know me at that show, which had its own price.
Yeah.
You know, like, I had really had the luxury of working on everything in anonymity, and then I got back and I was like, it's pretty different talking about my sex life in front of, like, my parents' friends. But they all wanted to come so badly. Yeah. And I was like, you're so supportive. And I literally had to develop the mantra. It was like, no art would ever be made if people did it to cater to their parents' friends. Like, you just have to push through it. And they looked a little shell-shocked afterwards, but they were very nice. Yeah. So it was a lot of my parents' friends. It was some family. And then basically I saved up every person I knew for that one show. I was like, I will not tell you about any other show. Not that I had any other shows for people to come to. I was like, you're not going to come to an open mic and watch me bomb. The people from my Groundlings class came, which I had been taking, which I signed up for around the same time. That was my burst of I'm going to do things in October. People from my Groundlings class, some people from college who were doing stand-up in LA, and then, yeah. So it was a pretty, I was like, if this doesn't go well, my parents will never recover socially. You'd be like, remember that time we watched your daughter be really bad at stand-up? So I was playing kind of a dangerous game.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a good thing I wasn't in my right mind. Because I didn't think about that.
And then you've got the holidays thrown in there. I mean, you really just pushed yourself really hard.
Yeah.
So, okay, so this is my thing. My armchair psychologist is, or take is, okay, so somebody did a TED Talk on this. I don't remember who it was. They said, you know, you can do hard things. So, have you allowed yourself to think, okay, I really pushed myself in ways that I had no idea I was capable of. All right, I can do the tough things.
I had a sticker on my laptop that said I can do hard things.
Oh my
like,
God.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yay!
Yeah, and it got me through a lot of weird decisions. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's, okay. Yeah. So you get the special done, and then what happens?
Yeah, so I posted it on YouTube, and it got, like, some traction for some reason. It got about 20,000 views, which is nothing in the grand scheme of things, but was so much bigger than anything I had ever. You know, I had had Slowpoke up for a year, and it had, like, 820 views. Most of them were my grandma trying to figure out closed captioning. So that got a little traction. I did get my first, like, negative comments. Like, I really had no online presence prior to that point. And it was, I had, like, a real crisis where I was like, should I be rethinking what I'm putting out there? Because my stand-up is so personal and talks so much about, like, how mentally ill I am and all of these things I feel. And I just had a real sort of crisis. And then through a series of sort of, you know, weird coincidences and connections, Bruce, my manager, ended up seeing Half and Half. And that really changed the game. Like, that just sort of catapulted me into a totally different world. Because I think if he hadn't found me, I would still be doing open mics in basements. I mean, I'm still doing open mics in basements, but I wouldn't be doing anything else in addition to that.
I should know exactly how many years I've known Bruce. And it was very random. But we've cultivated this relationship where he will, you know, give me big names to talk to. But a lot of times I get, you know, the people that are newly hired by him. And I love those the best because it is so much fun to watch what happens after.
Right.
Like, Erica Rhodes has, I mean, I think she was already a little bit big when he connected me with her, and you know, she's just gone on to big things. And Leah, I met last year, and you know, she's blown up even more.
She's TikTok huge. It was crazy.
So it's really cool. I appreciate the magic of what he does, and you know, the connections. And we were talking yesterday, and I call it magic because he said, you know, I don't even know how the business works. I probably should put that out there, Bruce. You obviously know how the business works, but sometimes, I mean, his point was sometimes it is a lucky circumstance that puts you in the right place to get booked for the certain thing or the big thing.
Yeah, and I asked him about that. I'm like, you believe in all your acts. What is the difference between Maria Bamford and some of the other people you rep that people don't know about? Yeah. And he was like, that's the X factor. That's the bit that we really don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, one of the other managers at Omnipop, Carly.
Oh, you want some more?
That would be great. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Yeah, quick, everybody.
Quick.
I feel like a hamster.
I know. I could sound edit this out, but I don't do sound editing.
It's part of the experience.
It is, yeah.
People want to be in the room with us.
Yeah.
Or not.
Well.
It's very possible.
So what kind of, like, what would you say for you have been some big things that have happened?
I remember what I was saying, and then I'm going to answer.
Okay.
Carly is one of the other managers at Omnipop.
Thank you so much.
And she was like, you are so lucky to have Bruce because he's a senior manager who cares about development clients, and like he has so much experience in such big clients that he can take on people like me who will lose him money. You know, like I think I've made him maybe $7 to the point where like he'll be like, let him accumulate for a while before you send me anything. It's like, you don't need to send me $6 at a time. But yeah, it's amazing that he, and I don't know how we talk so much. I'm like, he must not sleep.
No,
if
he
is taking care of all his other clients.
Sometimes they're short, but
yeah, I'll be up at 2 a.m. and I'll be like, why are you? I know you go to the office at like 9 first. I sleep in. So he's put me on the road a little bit. So I was here in Austin at Cap City in November. I was in San Francisco for Sketchfest in January, and I was in Indianapolis in February. And both of the, like, Austin and Indianapolis were, like, very classic, like, road gigs. So it was, like, two shows. I was headlining in the smaller room at the theater, And when I came to Austin the first time, I was like, oh, I've picked exactly the right line of work. I was like, I love airports. I love random weird hotels. I love like getting to the club early and getting to hang out with like the bar staff, because I used to bartend at Boom Chicago, and there's like a very common vibe across the bartenders of all comedy clubs. And I've just had so much fun in all of those shows that I've done, and just really getting to like have some time to like not worry about a 5-minute showcase set, but also not be stressing about like the narrative arc of an hour, you know? So you really just get to do 45 minutes of your best stuff and just talk to the audience. So that has been amazing. Like getting to be on the road more would be the dream for me right now. And also it's been a real lesson in rejection. Like just because I'm actually being put up for things now. So I've gotten more no's in the last 6 months than I've ever gotten in my life, but it's because I'm getting opportunities, you know, whereas before I wasn't really.
Are these like acting things? Or?
No, it's like I would audition for festivals, for showcasing things. I had my showcase for JFL 2 days after it got canceled. mostly showcases. That I haven't, like, I've gotten through to like the second or third round, but not to the final thing. And I do think if I didn't have Bruce in my corner, I might have at this point been questioning if I should be doing this. But just having someone like him who knows the business and is like, them's the breaks, this is how the game works, you know? And like, you can be right for something and still not get it. Like, you just don't know, none of it means that you're not good enough. So I've been trying to internalize that more. It's very difficult. But,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, the comedy world is rock with people who are just, like, sometimes crippled with self-doubt.
Yeah.
And it's tough to find through that.
It really is. I mean, even here, I've still just been trying to be like, I deserve to be here, don't I?
Yes.
And the tiny voice in my head is like, no. What are you doing here? You live with your parents in the valley.
Oh my god, but that's such rich material.
It really is, to be fair. My poor parents. I've gotten so much out of it.
Well, now that JFL is for now out of the picture, Moon Tower is elevated in stature, and Netflix is a joke. Did you get on that one?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
They want to kind of
probably, but it's,
take
I think
over that model.
Yeah, and they're really in a good position now.
Yeah, it's so big.
I want to know if they were involved in JFL crumbling. That's my. Like conspiracy theory, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't. I mean, maybe.
I should probably take that back, so I'm not accused of slander.
Wow. What are they gonna do? Like I said, three people listen to this podcast.
The CEO of Netflix and two other people.
Oh my god! Imagine. Yeah. Cease and desist. Take that out. Okay. Sure. But with time, you'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm curious at the Sketchfest. Did you do stand-up or did you do a sketch?
I did stand-up, yeah. I opened for Maria Bamford. And that was like a dream show.
Yeah.
It was at the Palace of Fine Arts. It's like a 1,000-seat room. It sold out. And a Maria crowd is so nice. And although, again, my poor mother came. And she was more stressed than I was.
Oh.
Like, just, she felt, she's a performer, she felt so much for me about the situation. And I know she got there and their seats were super close to the stage. She was freaking out because she was like, she's not going to want to see us. And she has this very distinctive coat. She was trying to shove it under the seat so that I wouldn't see it. Of course, I got on stage and locked eyes with her within like 3 seconds, which I was fine with. But I did that, and then I did one other mixed lineup. Just stand-up.
Is that the biggest performance space you've
done? Yes, It was so fun. It was amazing. Yeah. It's such a funny thing. It's like, it's sort of like the bigger the show is, the easier it is. Because people are there. There's a ton, it's a huge crowd. You know, like the comedians, I guess. The headliners earn that, right? It's like it gets easier as you sort of go on. Because people are there to see you. With exceptions, of course. People have weird shows. So, yeah, you know, I've had open mics that were much harder mentally than performing for 1,000 people.
Yeah. No, and as a fan, you know, I can see a performer absolutely crush at a theater, and then I'll see them in a small room or in a showcase, and, like, they get nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you not realize that this person just crushed at a theater? What is wrong with you people? Yeah.
My favorite thing is when you do the same set. You're like back to back, and one crowd will just hate you from the minute you get on stage. Cool. I'm so glad.
Do you think that since with these newer experiences that your stand-up has changed or your approach to...
Yeah, I think it has. I think especially that, like, Bruce has really encouraged the smarter side of my stand-up. Like, he really likes, like, very sort of high-level, like, intellectual stand-up. And he and I had a conversation. That doesn't mean, like, sometimes I'm just very stupid on stage, and I'll be like, I want to be stupid, and he's like, that's totally your call, that's fine. But we had a conversation very early on where he was noting me on a line delivery. Like, it was just a technical note. He really doesn't note my content. But he was like, I think it's reading a little hacky, the way that you're asking that question of the audience. And I was like, oh, well, I usually do it like that because it gets a laugh. And he went, that's not a good enough reason. And and it was like, he was like, people aren't hacky because it doesn't work. People are hacky because they get laughs and it works. And he was like, so do you just want to get the laugh, or do you want to be making, like, stand-up you're proud of, basically? And it really sort of changed how I thought about it in terms of, like, working towards trying to have an act that I really like and am proud of, as opposed to one that will just make people laugh.
Yeah.
Which sounds counterintuitive in a game where the whole point is to make people laugh.
Right, right.
Yeah, but he, like, gave me very explicit direction. He was like, not direction, but he was like, I'm setting you free of any expectations to, like, have to get up there and crush. He was like, I would rather see you basically trying new things and figuring stuff out than feeling like you have to be beholden to the audience and just repeating your old stuff and things like that.
To have somebody in your corner like that.
It's amazing. It is a game changer. Yeah.
To be fair, it's an investment.
I guess. Yeah. At this point, it's just time. Yeah. Well, I guess, and financial. Maybe he has less money on me.
Hurry up. Make people laugh.
I'm like, the advice you're giving me, I don't know if it's going to make you money, Bruce. you're working against your own interests here.
Tell me to not go for the laugh line. I'm confused.
But clearly it's worked for him, you know, with his client list, I mean, where they're at.
Yeah, but I love describing Maria. There's a handful of comics where I can say this about, but Maria isn't a perfect example where if you were to describe her comedy on paper, it should not garner any laughs, but it's Maria, and I think that's probably the point that he's trying to cultivate with you, is make it Olivia.
Yes.
Make it be Olivia, truly Olivia, and then it will work.
Yeah. So. Which is also part of what's cool about, like, his notes, is he's always like, you could tell me to go to hell. You know, like, that's, you know, the energy has always been, like, it's your act.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you what I think you should do.
Yeah.
with my years of experience, you know. I remember I first heard Maria Bamford on Two Dope Queens, and I was driving, and I remember just sitting up and being like, who is this?
Yeah.
And what is happening right now? Like, it was game-changing hearing her.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Lady Dynamite?
I did watch Lady Dynamite, yeah. Which was very funny meeting Bruce afterwards, because Bruce Ben Bacharach is based on him. Like, the manager
really?
Character, yes. I mean, so loosely, but...
Oh, my gosh, I didn't even piece that together. Because, you know what? I bet you I didn't know Bruce. Now I need to go back and watch and just find amusement.
Yeah, he was like, I don't know why it's a common theme that all my acts make fun of me.
That's the love language, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. It's like, I owe you my career. Uh-huh. Also.
Yeah. So you've been here in Austin since, when did you get to town?
Wednesday.
Okay. Did you like our airport?
I had no thoughts on the airport. Should I? Is it no,
well, no
famously
you said
bad
you liked
or good?
You liked airports. I'm just making a callback. What do you think about our airport?
Okay, I'll be honest, and I have a real bias here towards the departing airport. I don't notice that much about the arriving airport.
Right.
You know, because I usually just am gunning straight for baggage claim.
Yeah.
I do think Austin is interesting in that you exit in the... The departures and arrivals area are the same.
Yeah.
So you come off where everybody...
Yeah. That's a game changer with traffic.
Yeah. It's a lot. Like that whole... The curve around.
Yeah.
This is really interesting stuff for everyone. They're like, I came in here for the breakdown of the Austin airport.
So with the airport, depending on the time that you're flying out, and also do you meet...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a Salt Lake barbecue in the airport, and I don't think they serve this at the actual restaurant, but they have this amazing brisket nachos.
Oh, man.
So, if you want to stink up the airplane with brisket nachos, I'd be very, very happy.
Oh,
consider that.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And if you're not lactose intolerant, get Amy's ice cream across. It's right across the...
Wow, they're really... Amy's, that's a 1-2 punch for being on a plane, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's no respect for the traveler.
Okay, so you got here Wednesday. So what I was leading up to until I got sidetracked with airport talk is, since this is your first Moon Towers, and anybody that you've been like... Oh my gosh, I'm on the festival going with this person, or getting to see somebody that I don't know how much of a comedy fan you are.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes performers, they're just like in their own world and they don't necessarily focus on it.
Yeah, I think embarrassingly I am a little bit in my own world. Like I just don't watch that much stand-up. Which horrifies people when they find that out. But in a weird way, it's sort of... I think it's as important to be tapped into the open mic and intro scene as it is to see the, like, big names.
Yes.
Because, like, you want to see what mistakes to avoid.
Yes.
And what are, like, really common topics, sort of. You know, like, I'll go to an open mic and I'll see, like, two people covering the same thing. And I'm like, all right, I'll scratch that joke off. Just in terms of, like, the festival overall, like, Mike Birbiglia has always been a huge one for me. On Saturday, I'm doing a show, and Leslie Liao and Sophie Buttle are both on it, and I am a big fan of both of them, so that's very exciting for me, where I'm going to try not to go in too starry-eyed. I'm going to try to play it really cool. I'm going to be like, I'm like everyone else here. I'm cool. Yes. Yeah.
Sophie and I have, of course, I was introduced to her through Bruce, and she and I have chatted every Moon Tower she's been here. Yeah, every time she's been at Moon Tower now, so this is the third year that we're going to sit down and chat together. Mm-hmm. She's a brilliant mind.
Yes, oh my gosh.
Very interesting listening to her. You know, another case in point, she's just, every year, she's like gotten bigger and bigger. And big things have happened to her for the last year. And
yeah.
It's like, wow, it's really cool to see that happening. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully.
It's been very cool seeing sort of like what the lower echelons of stand-up are, you know? Like, I think most people, well, not most people, a lot of people are tapped into comedy in a way I'm not. But I just never thought about who was working the circuit that wasn't like the top four names in the game, you know? And there are so many levels to work through getting there. Yeah. But there, it's so cool seeing people starting to like ascend that ladder. Maybe I'll get less successful. But that would be a fun, but like a nice contrast, is if my Instagram followers just dropped each time that I come back.
No.
That would be an interesting experiment. Like, yeah.
You want to alienate your followers?
Well, maybe I'll just remove them.
Oh, okay. You could do that.
For the sake of the bit. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I keep trying to follow her, but I physically can't.
As we're going to start winding down, and that way we can fully engage in the popcorn.
In the popcorn,
after
the
recording is done. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want people to know about you?
We covered my intro to comedy, Amsterdam, mental illness, Bruce, festivals.
Punch list.
Yeah, I feel like it's... Oh, just my hair journey on this week has been...
Oh, welcome to Austin.
Just
humidity.
Devastating.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's, my hair is like a very important part of like how I present on stage.
Yeah.
And I've just had to get up there and be like, listen, everyone, I'm not having a good time. Just ignore my hair. You can just focus on my face instead. That'd be great.
No, it's brutal here.
Yeah. I was talking about, on stage, I was talking to some people about it. I was like, I had heard, like, the higher the hair, the closer to God in the South. I didn't realize it wasn't a choice. I thought people were teasing it to get higher.
Well, you know, Texas and choice.
Yeah.
We're not known for it. It's not our forte.
That was slick. Yeah, that's a high five.
Thank you. All right, well, if you are ready, and you know the rules here, Ms. Flood Wiley, emphasis on the hyphen, my closing question for you, one word to describe your future.
Oh, man. I'm gonna say uphill.
Okay.
No, and it's a good and a bad.
Okay.
That's why I picked it.
Yeah.
Is it could be an uphill battle, but I'm also moving upwards, going forwards. And as with most things, the trek upwards is part of the challenge.
Yeah.
The upward climb, but to a beautiful vista.
Very good. You can do hard things.
You can do hard things!
Exactly.
Alright, well that is a wrap on Comedy Wham Presents Olivia Foot Wiley. Please tell us where we can find you on social media, if you'll accept new followers on Instagram and wherever else, and your projects, your specials.
Yeah, I will not be accepting new followers. I will be, but you can view my Instagram page. I'm at Olivia Flood Wiley with no hyphen. That's...
Oh, it was a social media thing. That makes sense.
Yeah, our conversation earlier of whether there was a hyphen in my name. Yes, there's no hyphen on my handles. And I'm on YouTube at Olivia Flood Wiley Comedy, and that's where both my specials are, Half and Half and Slowpoke. If you're going to pick one, I would recommend Half and Half. I have some thoughts about Slowpoke. I'm like, I would have done that differently. But it was my first one,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I'll take that. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Okay, very good. We hope you've enjoyed learning about how Olivia got to be the comedic genius that you heard today just as much as I have. This has been Comedy Wham Presents Olivia Flood Wiley. I'm Valerie, and that's been funny. Thank you, Olivia.
Thank you so much.
Now we're going to have this popcorn.